Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Hello, welcome to On the Farm Pitcher List podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. I'm your host, Lamar Gibson.
And I'm your host, Jake Mache.
And we are recording today on the 1st of August. It is 7:33. So the trade deadline has just ended about an hour and a half ago. Deals are submitted, still being reported on, but I think we kind of have all the major deals that we're going to have. And Jake and I, we're going to break down those deals from prospect standpoint for, you know, the prospect implications, and then talk through dynasty and some possible redraft implications as well for the major league guys that were moving. Not a whole lot going. I think, you know, we had one deal that had been kind of suspected for a while, and that's Verlander going back to Houston. But not a whole lot to be impressed. I think once Ohtani, you know, was off the market, that freed up movement. But it looked like, you know, a lot of major pieces still, you know, stuck around. Dylan Cease not traded. We saw kind of like math returns for Giolito. And, you know, even Verlander, which we'll get into. Not super duper impressive. So it'll be, I think maybe a shorter podcast is our plan here as we kind of zip through. So with that being said, I know we don't have really much of a this week in baseball. A couple of things of note that Jake and I were talking about, seeing a lot of the college bats making their moves now from, you know, the handful of games that they play, Complex or Low A, and now, you know, getting into the thick of things, being promoted up to High A. So I saw reports about Tommy Troy being promoted, Matt Shaw being promoted. The biggest thing is Wyatt Langford being promoted to High A. And I think, and Jake, I think I can speak for you here, we're of the mind that, you know, as long as he doesn't look terrible, I do think Wyatt Langford goes into FYPDs as the number one overall.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, anything he could do to, like, improve his kind of, like, you know, his stock, his image is only going to help. He started off hot, and, you know, I think it would take – it takes steady production, and he stays right there. If he at all does, you know, exceeds expectations or hits the ground running, it's only going to, like, increase the hype, you know. So I think that he'll end up being more often than not taken 1-1.
So, you know, plan accordingly, pay attention to how he's doing. And another name, Nolan Shanuel, the Angels doing what they've been doing as, you know, recently as the past couple of years, Zach Neto, Ben Joyce to an extent, Reed Detmers, previously to that, Chase Silseth, just taking guys and either accelerating them very quickly through multiple levels or really taking guys that are a bit, you know, higher floor, lower ceiling, but that allows them to kind of move, you know, jump a couple of levels before they are deemed big league ready. So Shanuel already bumped up to Double A. So, you know, I'm sure, Jake, you were making the point off mic that that'll probably improve his draft stock, just proximity in of itself. I don't know that we see the skills there to really wow us, but yeah, you know, I could see it still being a good fit in a particular position, draft-wise, where, you know, if you want a cornerback that seems, you know, steady and, again, high floor, he's right there, probably only a year at best off from making his major league debut. So, with that being said, we're going to jump into talking about trades. We're going to go I have the MLB official trade deadline tracker up, and we're going to go in chronological order. So we're going to start about a little bit over a week ago, July 24th, and literally just go through trades of note. So we're not doing every single trade, because not every single trade is important for us to cover. Even this one, I guess you could make an argument that we could bypass it. This is July 24th, the Braves picking up Pierce Johnson from the Rockies in exchange for prospects Victor Vodnik, which is just a great name, and Tanner Gordon. Obviously, Johnson is there to, you know, back up the Braves bullpen and give them another arm in that bullpen to strengthen that area, even though he's not necessarily, you know, having the best season. I'm seeing notes here. He's at least at the time of the trade around 31% strikeouts as far as the batters he's faced, 13 to 15 in save chances. So it does give him something, a good Jesse Chavez replacement, Nick Anderson replacement. So that's Johnson, Vodnik, and Gordon. I'll be honest, they're, for me, prospect-wise, they were always on kind of the back half of the arms and just the overall prospects that the Braves had. So pretty light return in my estimation, and obviously them going to Colorado hurts whatever value that they had even more. But what are your thoughts about Pierce Johnson going to Atlanta, maybe more so from a redraft standpoint first, Jake, outside of even Dynasty?
Yeah, you know, I think that he is definitely going to help the team, I think, more than any, like, you know, fantasy roster. If you're in, you know, maybe a Dynasty league with saves plus holds, he might be useful. I mean, there's just going to be more opportunities for holds because the Braves have more leads. They might blow teams out a bit more, but, you know, I think that there might be more opportunities there. I don't think he's going to be, you know, really in the mix for saves, except for with, you know, their more prominent guys are on short rest and things like that. So, you know, but I think he'll be solid. And if you're in a really deep dynasty league that has the roster space and it saves holds, I think he's a viable option. And then with the prospects they got back, I mean, really, yeah, there's not a whole lot more than what Lamar said here. Vodnik is just another reliever. Tanner Gordon, he hasn't really ever shown much like strikeout upside this year. Before the trade, he only struck out 16% of batters at AAA, and he actually started in Colorado at AA his first start, which is interesting. But is Colorado's AAA in
yeah, it's all PCL.
PCL, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Albuquerque. So theirs probably is Albuquerque. So like one of the worst. Yeah. Out of the worst, one of the worst.
Yeah, so that's probably what's happening there. Not to throw him directly into the PCL, yeah. But at the same time, like, he'll be pitching in Colorado, so there's not much that you're really protecting him from, you know?
Yeah, and like you said, low strikeout stuff, his strikeout numbers, because he was a guy that I was paying attention to a couple of seasons ago when he was in the lower minors, higher strikeout numbers, and you just saw kind of, you know, bit by bit decrease as he's going up level to level. So yeah, with Gordon, like his strikeout rate, like you were saying, just doesn't really show the stuff that you would like to see. I paid attention to him a couple seasons ago when he was in lower minors, had higher strikeout totals, and you just kind of seen that peter out as he's gone up level to level. So yeah, I think that's a pretty quick and dirty assessment on that trade. We can move on. We can bypass that. We can jump into next sort of significant trade. This is more so from a dynasty and redraft league specifically, because no prospects were interchanged here. But this is the Dodgers getting Amed Rosario, sending Noah Syndergaard, who had some choice words to say apparently about some teams, including one can only, you know, assume the Dodgers as well.
Wait, what? I don't think I caught that.
Oh, you didn't?
I don't think so. No.
What, yeah, Syndergaard had some choice words about teams, I'm very much summarizing here. It's not a direct quote, but pretty much saying that he's had some teams that think that they can fix him, have kind of meddled with the stuff that he normally does, ask him to do stuff that's outside of what he's used to doing. And so he's looking forward to going to Cleveland and having essentially them let him, them letting him pitch the way that he's used to pitching.
Does he know that that's the case, though? Like, have they told him that? You know, like, is that just a big assumption? Are they going to get there and he's going to be like, yeah. And have you tried this yet?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. I think a lot of people are just like, dude, I don't think the Dodgers were messing you up. Like, I'm looking at this, a 7.16 ERA. Yeah. I don't think that was the Dodgers.
Yeah. Honestly, like, and it's a really tough position to be in for him because he was like, the guy, you know, he's throwing 100 miles an hour. I think so much of your just like self-worth and ego goes into that when you could throw 100, you know, and then to kind of have the injury, the surgery, and then come back and it just like is not working the way it used to. That has to be just such a depressing situation. So I can understand the frustration, but it's just kind of an interesting choice.
So, yeah, I agree. I think it is odd for him to have said that, but do you have any interest in Amed Rosario going over to the Dodgers? Possible sort of infield depth piece there.
Yeah, I think the Dodgers have been looking for, you know, middle infielder ever since they lost out on Trey Turner. And it's, you know, I don't know if he's going to be like the bona fide shortstop for them. Let's see. Has he really gotten into games he's played? Oh, so he's only played in against lefties so far. In his first four games with the team, he started against two lefties and sat against the two righties, with Miguel Rojas of course playing shortstop, and actually Rosario played second base in today. So yeah, it's like, you know, he's really bad defensively, and I don't think the Dodgers are just going to let him do that at shortstop. You know,
bad at shortstop.
Yeah, like I think they value that a bit more, which is why they play Rojas there so often. I mean, Rojas has played every one of the last six games at least. So, you know, that's it. He doesn't offer much outside of his defensive value, and so I don't think that they're going to stop doing that. You know, especially since they haven't so far. You know, in the handful of games since they got Rosario, so. He's going to have less playing time, but probably be more productive in the time that he does play. So it's horrible for weekly leagues, but in a daily, you could still kind of like finagle a little bit, you know?
Moving to the first sort of major trade that we saw, Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez leaving the White Sox, going to the West Coast, joining the Angels in exchange for Kai Bush, Edgar Caro. Giolito, Lopez as well, but Giolito obviously being seen as a rental, being a free agent at the end of the season, seemed like, I don't know, do you think that was a high price to pay for a rental, especially given not just the rental, but given the Angels' current sort of position on the outside looking in playoff-wise, the number of injuries that they have, etc. So I don't, if they do make the playoffs, I don't really know. Like, I guess if Ohtani goes like 0-1 bonds or something, like he can push him on through. Or if they go, I guess in that point, if they go like Rally Monkey Angels, then maybe some magic happens. But they don't really look like a playoff team. So you have Giolito coming over. You have Edgar Caro's kind of the headliner as far as prospect wise going to the White Sox. Which I think, I mean, White Sox don't really have any sort of catching depth of note, but also I don't know how much you want to trust them with a 19, I think Carroll's still 19, maybe turned 20 year old, to develop any better than I guess the Angels would. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on this trade? It's kind of a weird one.
It is. I remember when I first got the notification, I was really, there was a lot of emotions because, like, I'm, you know, I love Lucas Giolito. He's probably been my favorite White Sox player recently. And he's very accessible. You know, he's always, you know, he's on like the Rose rotation with Chris Rose a lot. And he was one of the guys that was doing the MLB The Show streams during the pandemic. He was like the White Sox representative for that. And he's always been very like open, accessible to fans. Very relatable guy, and just like a workhorse, and he really busted his butt to improve. And so it's really tough to see a guy like that, a great clubhouse guy, just someone who, like, you feel like you connect with a bit more than most other major leaguers, you know. And to see him, like, even if you expect it, it's still a little jarring. And so at first I was like, it's not enough. It's never going to be enough, you know. But for a rental, you know, it's like, that's solid value. And it really kind of hinges on where you see Caro's value overall, because he kind of in rankings, especially going into this year, he got like as high as like top 50, mm-hmm. maybe top 40, you know. Mm-hmm. And then with his kind of small step back in double A this year, now it's kind of like, ooh, maybe fringe top 100. And so mm-hmm. I think it just kind of depends on where you see him ending up there. But I think at the end of the day, you're still looking at someone who walks just about as much as he strikes out, with what he's already shown really good game power. He lost a bit of it in double A this year, but you know, it's kind of like, where do you put your evaluation of him? Where do you take more out of the 150 WRC plus in low A or the 104 in double A? And it was a big jump. It was an aggressive jump. It was an Angels jump, you know? So it's mm-hmm. possible that he just needed more time to adjust. He's one of the youngest players at double A. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not ready to be like, oh, he's outside of the top 100. I think he's still firmly in it for me. And so, yeah, I mean, he's the Angels number two prospect, which doesn't really mean like a whole heck of a lot because the Angels have a really bad farm system. Yeah. And I think that was part of the discourse around the trade too, was like, oh my God, you know, it was the Angels number two and number three prospect. That sounds a lot better than what it is, you know, because like even Kai Bush, like, I don't think I would have him in my top 25 pitching prospects.
Right.
You know, like, he's definitely not top 100 overall. He's probably not in my top 250 overall, you know?
Right.
And so, but it's like, oh, he's a number three team prospect. And it's like, yeah, that's like, you're trading with the Angels, though.
Yeah, org-wise, yeah. It doesn't mean the same. I agree. So here's what I'm curious about. You mentioned the assignment to, or the promotion to double A is kind of an Angels jump, right? Something that we're seeing, we just talked about with Nolan Chanuel and some others, right? Like, we're seeing this. And so I wonder, will the White Sox feel any pressure to be aggressive with Caro finishing this season going into next season? For instance, do they finish him out at double A here, start him at double A, and then feel the need to push him into triple A in the midst of 2024? Or because of like the return, he's like the headliner in this return that we got for Giolito and we needed something and this is the guy? Or, and I don't really know what their philosophy is. I know they had the whole Project Birmingham thing last year, and so, you know, they're not doing it this year, it doesn't look like, but it's still interesting to kind of watch and try to figure out what they're doing at the minor league level. You know, do they just say, hey, we're going to put him on our timeline, and our timeline says we're fine with rolling out Yasmani Grandal and whomever else at catcher for another couple of seasons until we know that this really young guy is set to take over the reins, and we don't feel pressured. In which case, it'll be interesting to watch like him finish a second season and repeat double A if they go down that route, repeat double A and get a full, you know, 300 at bats or so at the double A level in a new system, and see if there's any changes there. Like, do we see anything substantially change as far as, you know, you mentioned game power, plate discipline, good or bad, because we've seen guys switch teams and all of a sudden skills that we thought, oh, they really have, you know, translated tools into skills, and then those skills deteriorate for some reason, right? So Carroll's interesting. I agree with Kyle Busch. Like, Busch was part of that onslaught of arms that the Angels just went after, right? They had the one draft where literally all their draft picks were just pitchers. It was like 20 some up. That was ridiculous. I don't know if Busch was in that particular draft, but he's in that general window of time. And I agree, like, he's not somebody that is moving the needle for me at all. And I haven't seen or heard enough about his stuff, pitch design, mix, general, you know, stuff or anything of that nature, extent, you know, any sort of tangible or even intangible that would make me think that Chicago's going to get something greater out of him. I was going to ask you this. Giolito, if you have Giolito from a dynasty standpoint, so I'm going to turn off redraft, go into dynasty mode. Do you like this trade for his dynasty value? So you're thinking that's more short term, knowing that he's going to be a free agent. Do you have any sort of speculation on where he might land as a free agent going in the 2024 season? So it's like there's a multi part question there for you.
Yeah. I don't really know where he would end up, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if he stayed with the Angels or went to like the Dodgers or the Padres, because he's from Southern California. And so I think playing there for the half a season is I'm just going to assume, if I had to make an educated guess, I think he's going to enjoy that, being around family, kind of where he grew up, and could want to stay there. And so if I had to make a bet right now, I'd probably say one of those three Southern California teams. And then as far as like what it does this year, I think if anything, he's a really competitive player, and it might just be an extra little boost that you're not playing on a basement team, you know? And honestly, I think looking, there was a really cool photo from the broadcast, in his debut with the Angels, of him just like looking over at Shohei Ohtani, like really just like starstruck. And I think playing next to Ohtani and Trout, I think can only make you more motivated. And I think that could just be something that is an intangible part of being there on a competing team with some of the best players in the world. And, you know, it could be a nice boost for him. He looked really good. I watched his first start with the Angels, and he looked really good. He was like, he had pinpoint accuracy for most of the start. He kind of continued struggles with the home run ball. He's given up a ton of homers this year. And so, you know, the park is really similar as far as like giving up homers, right? He doesn't go to like a super pitcher friendly park. And so it's just kind of like, you look at it and you're like, I think it'll regress because it's super unlucky in theory that like he's giving up so many home runs. And so I think just like regression there, a better environment to pitch in, more competitive. He's a competitive player. I think that if anything, there's a little boost there, but nothing super like tangible. Ideally you'd probably get more wins. I'm really happy for him. If he's going to go anywhere, going and playing with Ohtani for a half season and trying to make a playoff push, like I think it's a good of a spot for him to end up, especially since he's from the area. So I like it for him. And then also a quick note with Caro, Rick Hahn said that he expects Caro to contribute next year, but they can contribute next year. And so I think if he takes a step forward and kind of looks a little bit more like the guy we saw last year, it's not out of the realm at all that he then continues to, you know, get promoted early next year to AAA maybe, and then maybe be on the big league roster at some point next year. Because I mean, Hahn said as much, but I think that you can't really take that super aggressive approach if you see the same thing that you've been seeing from him this year, because that doesn't really scream someone who needs to be promoted quickly, you know?
Right. And you already have some other holes that they got to figure out with, you know, the rest of their pitching now that they made this other trade, which I'm about to highlight, which is trading away Lance Lynn. So you don't have Lynn, you don't have Giolito. I guess there's a potential for you to re-sign him, but that's, you know, in the offseason, that's free agent, but that's probably not going to happen, right? You still have Cease, because, again, they did not trade Dylan Cease, so Cease is still around, but I don't know who else is going to pitch in the White Sox rotation. You got to figure out what you're going to do with or about Tim Anderson. Like, is this just a fluke season, and he's going to bounce back, because he is now in that age 30 realm that we see guys, you know, all of a sudden those, oh, hamstring here, that we were talking off mic about another player who's not yet at 30 but is, you know, already we're seeing a lot of soft tissue injuries racking up, and it's something about that 30. Well, I know, haven't been, I don't know about you, Jake, but haven't been well past 30 now, those soft tissue injuries, yeah, they don't heal the same way when you're in your 20s. So the backs, the knees, the aches and pains, they linger and they start to deteriorate. So I say all that to say the White Sox as a whole, in the offseason, I don't know, you know, what their move is going to be, because it seems like they really don't want to go full on rebuild, but like their roster is essentially making them make that decision. So with Carroll, again, it gets back to exactly what I was saying before. How aggressive do you want to be, to your point, right? Like, how aggressive do you really want to be? Because to me, what Han is saying, you know, some of that is, you know, GM BS, but some of that is like, well, that sounds almost like you think you're competing and he can just be a piece. Because if you're going in full rebuild, you say, hey, we let it all marinate. We let the young guys, you know, stay in AA, stay in AAA as long as they need, because we know we're going to be awful for a while. And then we take it from there. So, yeah, mixed messages. Interesting. Like I said, next trade, July 28th, was the Dodgers taking on Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly making his return, coming from the White Sox in exchange for Nick Nastrini, Jordan Leisure, Trace Thompson. Thompson going back to the White Sox, right? Because
he was there for a minute.
So interesting there. Thompson, you know, has shown some flashes of being okay as a fourth outfield type, strikes out a whole lot, but has shown some pop. He can run into a few home runs. Don't really see much more from him. I'll be honest, I've never heard of Jordan Leisure. You know, kudos to the Leisure family. Kudos to Jordan. Good luck to you. Don't know who you are. Nick Nastrini is really the headliner. And I think it's very interesting that, you know, a month and a half ago, we were raving, and I was definitely raving everywhere about like how good the AA team, like the Tulsa Drillers were, the AA affiliate of the LA Dodgers and their pitching staff. Look at this pitching staff. Oh my goodness, all this talent. And then Emmitt Sheehan came up. Didn't really work out the way we wanted it to. Bobby Miller, I think, has been acceptable, right?
Mm-hmm. Especially it took him a lot longer. He was really in the system for a while. He spent a lot of time in AAA.
Yeah. Landon Knack is still yet to make his debut, and he's on the older side. He's
26 now.
Yeah. And Nick Nastrini is there. And if you look at Nastrini's numbers, bit by bit, the numbers have started to kind of fall off just a bit as we move through the summer. And so again, with the White Sox, it's just kind of repeating the same refrain we just had. I don't really know what they're going to use this to build off of here.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Yeah, I think like moving Joe Kelly, okay, that's obvious. Moving Lance Lynn, okay, that's obvious. Like, they had to move those two. But for what they're getting back, like, again, I don't know anything about Jordan Leisure, but, like, the Jordan Leisure spot in this trade, to me, especially if I'm dealing with a team like the Dodgers, like, give me a Rain Doncon. Give me, like, a super young, super projectable, like, rookie complex guy. Not that he's going to be great, but just give me somebody that I can just wish cast this guy could be anything on, because he's so young, he's so toolsy. Like, give me that. Don't give me another like org depth arm that I can probably get anywhere. Getting Trace Thompson back, I mean, I don't really get that either. Like, why not just go fully prospect oriented. I don't see why they need to get Trace Thompson at all.
Yeah, that was weird. I saw that and I was like, really? Why? You already had him. Like, it wasn't great. Like, I guess you just need someone to play. Like, if maybe they assumed that they were going to trade more guys than they ended up trading.
Maybe.
And then they just needed someone to feel
like continuously hurt. Eloy just like Mr. Glass just continuously out. So you need guys. We're going to be having this sort of like scratching our heads a lot about the White Sox because I think they're on here at least one other time, if not twice. So we're going to have a lot of like, we don't know.
And even the moves they didn't make are head scratchers, you know?
Let's talk Dodgers. So they get Lynn, they get Joe Kelly coming back. Obviously, Kelly is a boon for their bullpen, which they need. Lance Lynn. How do we feel about Lance Lynn in their rotation, considering that their rotation continues to be like pretty banged up? And if they're not, if their rotation isn't banged up, they're underperforming.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't expect them to go with a six-man rotation, but that's kind of what it looks like the plans are. And depending on what they do with Michael Grove, they might move him to long relief or bump him down. I don't think a decision has to be made there quite yet. But, you know, it's they've dealt with a lot of injuries there. They're like Bueller has been out all year, won't be back till next year. Kershaw is out, like, and you just kind of have to expect that Kershaw will kind of be intermittently on the IL. Dustin May is originally looked that it wasn't going to be that bad, and now it's looking like he won't be back this season. Even like a ton of relievers, and so I think they desperately needed depth, and I think they just saw something in Lance Lynn that wasn't just like completely broken. And I mean, like, looking at it, like, he doesn't, there are definitely still things that he does really well. Like the strikeout rate, 26.9%. That's really solid. That's one of his best career marks. Looks like his second or third best over the course of a season. So like, that's still good. He walks about a major league average. And then looking at, I think he had a really good Sierra number, didn't he? Let's see here. Oh, scroll down. Yeah. 3.9 Sierra compared to a 6-something ERA. What's it? 6.47 ERA. Even the expected ERA is like a full 2 runs lower. I was going to check like FIP here is 5.21 and then XFIP is 4.01. So it's like really no matter how you slice it, he's not as bad as what he has been. And he's 36. You know, so you can't like don't expect much out of it, but I would rather him go somewhere better with a better offense behind him, with a better just pitching coach staff, you know, like better organizational development, and then just see what can happen there. What's really crazy that I think about here and there is that he struck out 18 against the Mariners in like a random start this year. I remember popping into that game for the last 3 innings and thinking, what the hell is happening? and so it's like, I haven't been able to get that image out of my head as I'm seeing him get blown up everywhere else. I'm like, what was happening that day? Did he have like a fantastic lunch and it just like propelled him through the, you know, like
sometimes you're on.
I don't know.
Sometimes when you're on. Would you go after in a redraft? Would you go after Lance Lynn? Like what is a scenario that you would look to? Because we're talking about major league trade deadlines, but for most fantasy leagues, trade deadlines are right around the corner for most standard leagues as well. Would you go after Lance Lynn in a redraft? And if so, like, what's the scenario that it would have to be?
Yeah, I think if you need innings and maybe quality starts or wins, honestly, maybe strikeouts, just because he's already thrown 119 innings pitched this year with a 10.83 K9. So, you know, that's quantity. It's not quality. It's not been quality, but like, I think it will be about league average going forward. You know, maybe he's got like a 4.25 ERA going forward. And I think that's definitely useful. And it's a lot easier to buy a player with a 6 ERA than it is most others. But I think I would have to give up. I think maybe like a fringe starter that like offers something very specific to a team that needs it, right? Like a stolen base guy. Honestly, like in a redraft specifically, I would probably give up Esteban Ruiz for Lance Lynn because I probably already have a good cushion in stolen bases because of what he's already gotten me. Even if you're in like a head-to-head situation, like I could sacrifice like maybe half a category, you know, like still have guys that could contribute, assuming that's the case, to get like an impact somewhere else, you know, or a batting average guy. Maybe Luis Arraez is probably too much and it would be probably laughed at, giving up like someone who's bringing up like top 50 value right now for Lance Lynn. But kind of that type of player, right? Like he's just batting average. He doesn't contribute anything else. And he's kind of fringe starter. Like you can get by with him elsewhere. But you can offer him to a team that needs it and be like, hey, you are really bad in batting average. Here's a savior for that specifically. Or you need more steals. Here's a Stewie Ruiz. This is exactly what you're looking for. And then in return, I get like a quality arm that's going to give a lot of innings and thereby strikeouts and some wins on a much better team. So I think that that's definitely a deal that I would make. And I think that if I have Lance Lynn and I have a specific category I want to improve, I think I'd be all right with giving him up too. And even if, like, if he goes and he throws a, you know, low four ZRA, like, are you going to be super upset about that? Like, probably not. Might hurt a little bit, but I think that's has a potential for a win-win scenario in a deal.
Right. Moving on, we are going to head to July 29th, so only a few days ago. This is the first of the two moves by the Mets, major moves by the Mets as far as their rotation is concerned. Mets trading Max Scherzer to the Rangers straight up for Luis Angel Acuna, of course, the younger brother of Ronald Acuna Jr. A lot of people speculated that this was when the trade was first reported, it was like Acuna, and we're waiting to see who the other prospects were, and then come to find out there were no other prospects. It was just straight up. Let's talk about Scherzer going to the Rangers. Okay. Rangers, really good team. Good offense, obviously. Pitching has been a bit of a problem because of injuries. Obviously, they got DeGrom. That didn't work out almost immediately. Eovaldi now seems to have possibly a more serious, you know, issue with his forearm, same forearm that he had surgeries on. So all of a sudden their rotation, which was already a sort of thin to begin with, has gotten a lot thinner. They get Max Scherzer. From a dynasty and a redraft standpoint, what is your valuation of Max Scherzer, like, just as a pitcher, especially now that he's on the Rangers? Like, redraft, talk to me, and then dynasty, talk to me. What do you think of him?
Yeah, I think if I have a dynasty roster that I think can compete this year, is competing this year, can still compete next year, that is really, I don't think there's a specific kind of roster build that needs to be there, like as far as youth or experience goes, veterans or whatever. I think he's valuable for teams that are going to compete, because he's still been really solid. Looking at, like, let's say KBB specifically, he's a 20.5 K minus BB percentage, which is the lowest that he's posted since 2014. But it's still fantastic. That's still kind of like that 20% threshold. That's better than 80% of the qualified starters in the league, at least. You know, so it's like, he's still a very good pitcher, still locates the ball well, doesn't walk a ton of guys. You know, I think that the ERA is probably a little higher than we would expect from him. But going forward, I think maybe you could see like a 3.75 to 4.25 guy that's still going to get solid strikeouts. You know, so it's like, yeah, he's not going to be the pitcher that he was, but he's still solid. He's playing on a good team. The park is, I think, comparable. Like, Citi Field is an extreme pitcher's park. And I think Texas plays a bit more neutral. So there's nothing like advantageous there, but you know, he's much better offense to support him. And I think that he's still a solid pitcher. You can't really expect the Max Scherzer of even last year. And he's probably going to get injured kind of more. He's going to be kind of like in a Kershaw situation where it's like you expect him to be on the IL probably twice in a season, maybe 2 to 4 weeks at a time. And you just kind of like roll with that, you know, but you're still getting quality innings when he goes out there. He's a competitor. He's going to pitch until he can't, you know? So I think he's still solid. And he's not exactly someone that I'd be dying to move if I have him in Dynasty, you know, trying to get ahead of like the drop off, because it's honestly possible that he could just continue being solid until he just decides to stop. You know, I don't think there has to be a big blow up at the end.
And then what about for redraft?
Yeah, redraft. I think similar. I think you're still kind of expecting him to be, you know, like a top 100 overall player, you know, maybe on the back end of that, probably right around 100. He probably gets drafted next year, like 120 or so. And I was expecting him to be that rather than the kind of top 50, 20, 30 guy that we've known before. I think it's just kind of like setting expectations and knowing that you're going to get a solid pitcher, but he's not going to be like Max Scherzer, you know, that we've kind of gotten used to. But like, still good. He's still good. Still 20%, like I said, 20% K minus BB. And I think that's going to continue. And, ERA probably a little less than 4. And especially in kind of the offensive environment right now, it's still really valuable.
And then looking at Luis Acuna, I'll be honest, I was surprised to see that he's number 44 overall on MLB Pipeline. I think he's a fine player. I think he's improved over the past couple of seasons. I think when he first popped on radars, obviously the name value being Ronald Acuna Jr.'s younger brother was kind of like, oh, okay, but he's a completely different type of player. Much more wiry, much more at the time seemed like a slap hitter, you know, top end speed, but not a whole lot of pop. You know, people were kind of like, ah, okay. Like saying, you know, if they share a name and that's kind of like it, and he definitely has improved. I just didn't know, at least from the MLB Pipeline standpoint, that they considered him that much improved, that they're putting him in top 100. I don't know that I would have him off the top of my head in the top 100 of prospects if I had to put together a list, let alone in the top half, but there he is. So the speed is real. He has some pop. I'm looking at the numbers that they have, at least time to trade, 830 OPS, 42 stolen bases in 84 games at Double A. So now he moves to the Mets, and the Mets are also a team that I don't really know what's going on with their farm. You know, obviously we know about Ronnie Mauricio. Francisco Alvarez has put together maybe the quietest, best season for a catcher, let alone a catcher of his age, like ever. Cause every time I see his numbers, I'm like, wait, he's hitting what? He hit how many home runs? So, you know, those two have definitely worked out, but pitching wise, I think their pitching prospects, even the fringe guys like the David Petersons and whatnot, have really clicked into place. The more kind of notable pitching prospects, a lot of them have suffered through either injury or just poor performance. And for Acuna, I don't know. I guess you could put him in the outfield. I'm just kind of projecting in the next couple of years, you could put him in the outfield. You're assuming that Mauricio is going to be at short. I guess you could put him at second as well. He's played second base. But I don't know that it doesn't hurt his value, but it doesn't really do anything. I think you kind of, for me, I'm kind of net neutral overall. I would have to see something really incredible for me to see a boost to Acuna. I think he's an okay player. I said, speed is really the thing that's going to carry him through. If he can make enough decent contact, you know, he can rip up the base pass, but he's kind of in that Ruiz standpoint, right? He's mm-hmm. one category sort of offering. So another sort of meh trade here. Like, we're going through a lot of sort of like meh shoulder shrugs of trades, which is kind of what the deadline was. But
yeah, I think I like Acuna a bit more. Like, I recently did a deep dive on him because I got him in a trade, like a part of a much larger trade. It was like 4 for 4. And, you know, I think that if anything, the park is a little bit more difficult to hit in New York. Texas has been better on the hitting side for development than pitching. The Mets, have kind of a mixed bag. You know, Alvarez has been great. Beatty's been disappointing, but still hitting the ball well. And so it's like you said, there's not a huge difference in kind of like the change of scenery. But I think that Acuña could, if he can just find a way to get to a little bit more power, he could kind of really take off. And it's kind of asking for something that might not exist. You're kind of assuming, again, because of his name, there's might be more there. But he has improved his plate discipline continuously since like 2021, 2022. He was kind of mid-20s strikeout rate. And then in 2022 in AA after the promotion, he dropped it down to 21.3. And then this year in AA, he dropped it again to 18.9. And he's still carrying about a 9 to 10% walk rate, which has been pretty consistent as well. And so solid.
He's like 21, 22. Like, he's still pretty young, right?
Yes, he is. He's still pretty young. He is 21.
So, yeah. So, I mean, he has that. So, even the fact that he's kind of like doubling up in AA, right? Like repeating the grade, so to speak, isn't as painful as if he was a bit older. So, yeah, right. we'll see. Moving, and we'll start to kind of zip through. July 30th, we had Blue Jays trading Jordan Hicks acquiring Jordan Hicks from the Cardinals, for Sim Robares. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And Adam Klopfenstein. I don't really know why the Blue Jays are getting Hicks. I mean, I know Romano went down. I mean, I guess I do know why, because Romano went down. The Blue Jays still are trying to run into the playoffs. I don't know that it's going to happen, but they're trying to claw their way into the playoffs. So they need to replace their closer. That's pretty much straight up. I think for Hicks, from a dynasty or a redraft standpoint, he's pretty much been who he's been with the Cardinals. Like, he's going to be on the better end as far as relievers. I think if you are in a similar team need as a fantasy team where you need saves and hold, maybe you need like a third guy, maybe you have two really good closers or back end guys, and you're looking to just like shore up that category and help out your ratios and strikeouts as well, then, you know, definitely I would see going after Hicks. If you have him, no need to move him. He's going to step right in the role. And I think when Romano comes back healthy, I could see them, sharing a little bit. And even if they don't share, like, Hicks is going to be right there at the back end of the games. Even if he's not closing it out in the ninth, he's going to be there in the seventh and eighth. So he's still going to be save or hold eligible, I should say. Roberts had a really, like, he was kind of the guy last year. And even in 21, I remember seeing him along with Tiedemann and, who's the third Blue Jays? There's a third. Zulueta was the third, like, Blue Jays arm that everybody's, like, really high on. This year seemed to take some major steps back. I mean, he's not even striking out. He doesn't have a strikeout per inning. It's 86 strikeouts and 88 and two thirds at AA. So not really showing the same performance that I think a lot of people expected out of him. Klopfenstein's actually been interesting because he was somebody that I think a lot of people have written off. I'm pretty sure, and I should have researched this, but I'm pretty sure he had an injury somewhere in his career, like pre-COVID, like 2019, maybe going into 2020-ish. But regardless, I know performance-wise, he didn't look like he had the command, didn't look like he was going to be able to stick around. And this season has looked much better. Some of his best numbers overall that he's put together. So I think Klopfenstein could be interesting, but the Cardinals have really kind of struggled. We've talked about this in some other podcasts. They've kind of struggled when it comes to their pitching development recently. So as much as I would think, oh, Klopfenstein's interesting, we'll love to see him get a shot and see like what he does in the next year or so. Now all of a sudden with the Cardinals kind of having some issues, I don't know that they're going to be able to take him that next level. They haven't done it with their own, Libertor and Graceffo. And we've talked about these guys. So I don't know, you know, what happens with Klopfenstein, but if there's anybody out of this trade, that I'm sort of put a bookmark to or kind of highlighting the name, it's probably his. Robert, like I said, I don't know if that was just flash in the pan. Sometimes guys bubble up and have like a good year and a half and then that's it. But yeah, I think Hicks is, you know, Hicks is the guy here out of this trade to pay attention to. And again, I think, you know, redraft or dynasty, you run at him if you need to shore up your saves and holes in the back end of your own bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this trade. I like this trade for the Cardinals, like what they're trying to do as an organization, but I don't have the confidence in them to actually like pull it off. Mm. I thought it was really funny that Mazalek was talking about the trade deadline and their acquisitions and saying that like, he's like, yeah, we really looked at swing and miss. Like we wanted guys that get swings and misses. And it's like, wow, welcome to the party. You are the 30th person to get on the bus. I'm happy you got here. I'm right. A little disappointed it took so long, but like, right. Okay, welcome. Open yes. arms. Sure. Welcome to the club, yes. buddy. Yes. Because he's like, you know, we've just had real struggles with that recently. It's like, yeah, because you're telling guys to throw it right down the middle.
You're telling them to pitch to contact like it's still 2003.
Yeah, just throw some sinkers on his hands and you'll be fine. You know, right. Let's get out of here. Right. So, yeah, no, it's like, okay, like, try your best. But like, and they're not exactly the guys that you're going to trust to turn an organization around philosophically in the pitching department. Like, okay, we're just going to blow the doors off people, get a bunch of strikeouts. Like, you know, Klopfenstein's looking a lot better. Strikeout rate looks better. And then you have I don't know how to say his last name, but the other guy kind of going the other direction, right? So, you know, it's like for me personally, I'm less interested in each of these guys than I might have been before just because it's the Cardinals. And until they show me that they could develop a pitching prospect that can strike people out, I refuse to believe that they can because it's been one after the other horrible.
Yeah, Michael McGreevy still is looking good at the double A like level.
18% strikeout rate right now.
Is it? I thought it was higher.
Let me see. I've been really sour. admittedly, on the Cardinals.
Maybe it's just because I've seen a couple of starts of his that had some high strikeouts, and so
I've just watched like Graceffo come back from injury, and I was really excited about it. I probably mentioned it on the pod, mm-hmm. and then he's struck out like one or two or three in those last few starts. McGreevy had been again trying to be like, all right, like oh, he's gotten a little better. It's back to you know, like
yeah.
Right now, yes, 6.75 K per nine and 17% strikeout rate for McGreevy this year.
Never mind. You were right. I'm wrong. Moving on. More Cardinals trading away Jordan Montgomery and Chris Stratton to the Rangers, getting back Thomas Sagesse. I think it's Sagesse. Sagesse, maybe. Should have looked up how to pronounce these names. I apologize. Tekoa Roby and John King from the Rangers. We talked about the Rangers obviously having a thin pitching staff. This is another move to help them shore it up. I like Montgomery going to the Rangers a lot. I think if you have Montgomery, you have to really like this. Hold on to him, I would say, in a dynasty standpoint. I would say run at him if you're in dynasty or redraft and if you can make a trade. Because I think that this will be helpful in those categories you talked about as far as like playing for a team that is that much better, especially offensively. So gives him a little bit of a bump as far as win leagues, quality start leagues. I don't think he'll hurt you as far as ratios or strikeouts. I don't think that's going to change a whole lot, but I think, you know, he is who he is as far as strikeouts, as far as ERA and whip, but that boost in potential wins and quality starts, I think is helpful. Stratton goes into the bullpen. I don't think there's much, to note there. I think he's going to be more mid relief. Guy, he doesn't offer much. Roby, I know, was somebody that some writers and analysts were high on coming out of the Rangers. Farm had some injury trouble. I think again going to the Rangers, I don't know if they can pull the rest out of him that he would need. The stuff seems like, you know, that's really what spoke to people. He got drafted in 2020 in that shortened draft. And I think he got hurt, missed time. And then I think he came back and looked pretty good last season. This season, a little bit less so. Sagesse, I actually have him rostered in my Dynasty League. And I was saying to somebody in one of the various servers I'm in, pretty much the same valuation. He looked like he was going to be blocked in Texas. Looks like he's going to be blocked in St. Louis. I still think he's a pretty good ball player, but he's also somebody that I could see being a very much like what is my guy's name? It'll come to me after we're done potting. But there's another Rangers second baseman that I'm thinking of here. Not Kinsler. Foscue. That's who it is. Justin Foscue. Seems like he could be very much in a similar vein of just like he has pop, not a ton of it, but like 20 home runs is doable. Maybe I think he's maybe a better batting average play than Foscue was. I don't think he has as much swing and miss. So Foscue was like, or is like a 240, 250. I think Sexy could get 260s and a little bit higher. But again, he's not. He plays shortstop, but I don't think that's his ultimate position at the major leagues. I think he's more of a second baseman, maybe a third baseman. And again, I think you've seen blockages with the Rangers because they had Semien, they got Seager, they got Jung. Maybe they could have put him in left field because they don't really have any set left fielder. But now he goes to St. Louis. They have Arenado. They have Mason Winn, who looks like he's about to be ready to get promoted to the major leagues at short. And he's a dynamo when it comes defensively. And now his look like his bat has really progressed in the upper minors with his recent hot stretch. So maybe, you know, second base, because they're still not sold on Nolan Gorman. Like maybe that's where he ends up. If Arenado walks, they still have Jordan Walker, who again came up as a third baseman. They moved him to the outfield, so they could potentially move Walker back in. So, you know, he's somebody that gets moved and it doesn't really do anything, you know, materially for his value either. John King, I'll be honest, I think that's just more of an org depth piece as well. So are there any thoughts, anything that I missed here? I think Montgomery is the guy when it comes to this trade that benefits the most if you have Montgomery on your team, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I was really disappointed to see Tekoa Roby go to the Cardinals. I started kind of noticing him more this season and paying attention to him. And I was really excited. I was like, yeah, I mean, the Rangers, again, kind of, we mentioned, haven't had a ton of success recently, but you know, he's looking really good. It's a good fastball, a couple good breakers, and he could kind of just develop the arsenal a little bit more. You know, I think he could be solid, and then going to the Cardinals is just like, we'll see. But he has good stuff, like you said. I think I like him the most. As for Dynasty, I think I like him the most in the deal. Mm-hmm. Montgomery is solid. But and with him, you know what you're going to get. You know, he's exactly. Not a ton of upside, has a high floor. He's just going to be a solid dude.
Yeah.
Goes out, gets a bunch of quality starts. So super valuable if you're competing, you know, and plays for a much better team, going to get more wins. And, you know, put up just solid numbers. He's consistent. So he's good. But I think if I were going to take a shot on somebody in Dynasty and kind of like hold on to him for a while, I'd probably pick Roby.
Okay. July 30th, Angels acquire CJ Krohn and Randall. Is it Grichuk or Grichuk? I should know.
Grichuk.
Is it Grichuk? I've never actually heard it said out loud. I've always just read it. From the Rockies in exchange for Jake Madden and Mason Albright. I'll be honest, Mason Albright, I'm very, very, very lightly familiar with just seeing his name. Yeah. I'd never heard of Jake Madden, even though he's the higher ranked prospect. He's their number 8 prospect, and Albright is number 28. So go figure.
28 on the Angels, Heath.
Yeah. So I don't know why I know I've familiar with that name and not Jake Madden, but there that is. Not seeing much from a prospect standpoint. They also sent money because it's Colorado, and of course they did. But Krohn and Grichuk, I think I like both. I mean, what am I trying to say here? I think I like Grichuk a little bit more only because the outfield situation continues to stay in flux. Mickey Moniak is tearing it up right now, but I think he's still, at any point in time, like, that could go south because he's still, like, swinging and missing quite a lot. That has not changed. He just happened to make a lot of contact currently. And then you have, what, Taylor Ward with facial fracture.
Yeah, he's likely out for the year.
So you have that, unfortunately. So I think Grichuk has a couple different spots that he could slip into, provide value. Cron, these are kind of just known guys. I think if you're looking for depth in a fantasy standpoint, again, dynasty or redraft related, not bad targets to have if you're looking for like just one more outfield bat or one more like corner infield bat to help you with some depth if you're making a playoff push. Am I missing anything from these two?
Honestly, it's probably a good time to buy because of the fact that they're leaving Colorado, it's just such they're not going to be hitting half the time in Coors. Mm-hmm. And so honestly, the owner that currently has them might have been really banking on them playing at Coors and might even have just been, if it's a daily league, just been playing them at home. But now they're in an extremely better lineup in a park that's still solid. It's probably middle of the pack for offense. And so it's, I think you can get a bit of a boost. Like you said, Grichuk is going to have a ton of playing time because they needed him for depth. And Cron is now their first baseman. They haven't had a good one all year. They now have one who's solid. So I think they're both going to get a ton of playing time. And I think that there are good values right now. But you can't really expect a ton of like power for Grichuk. He doesn't hit the ball hard well at all. It was mostly like the Coors effect. But he has a really good on-base percentage recently. He's a good hitter. He's just kind of not have a ton of pop. But he's going to play a lot in a really good lineup. And then Cron, like, solid guy, really similar to Montgomery, honestly. Like, you pretty mm-hmm. much know his floor. He's not going to, like, light the world up, steal any bases or anything. It's just going to be, like, a average batting average, good counting stats, and some maybe a little bit above average power, maybe, like, 20 homer power over the course of a year in Los Angeles. So, honestly, they're solid veteran values that right now, if you want to kind of go after someone who's just going to play a lot.
July 31st, we have the Rays getting Aaron Civale for Kyle Manzardo. I think this was a surprise. A lot of people were like, wait, what? some people, are thinking, Devil Rays magic. Maybe they can resurrect something out of Civale that even the Guardians couldn't do.
Like they did with Eflin.
So that's a possibility. I think a lot of people were pointing to, like, maybe Manzardo is taking more of a downturn than what we thought. We know he had some injury. We know there's some personal family related issues that he's been dealing with that has been kind of reported on in bits and pieces.
And this is definitely not going to help either. Like, if you're struggling in your personal life, I think his mom has been in the hospital pretty consistently. Like, now you're being traded probably away from her, potentially further. That's just, you're moving life, So that's just, I think, an added wrinkle there,
I think this season definitely has not turned out the way a lot of people anticipated, especially compared to how on fire he was last year and really moving himself up ranks. He goes to a Cleveland team that could use a first base, and we're going to talk about that later as one of their deals. So he's not completely blocked. They do have Josh Naylor as a potential first baseman, but I think he's been mostly DHing. I don't think they really like him there. They did have Josh Bell. They did move him. That's one of the later trades that happened on today, actually. So, I think for Manzardo, it's almost like maybe a bit of a reset for him. It's a soft reset. It's not a hard reset, right? But it's just a soft, like, hey, you don't have to worry about when's your time and when you're going to get called up and that sort of stuff. Like with Tampa, he kind of has maybe a clearer space to playing time. If not this year, then going into next year. I would just be curious to see if his numbers move at all at AAA with Cleveland versus what he's been putting up so far with Tampa. To finish out this year, I think that would be interesting to see if we see a big spike, if we see kind of the same, or worst case scenario, if we see even more decrease in his average and his own base, because that would be quite odd. Are you interested in Civale as a resurrection project with the Rays at all?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, he's been a serviceable guy and even 12 team leagues this year. I think his ERA is kind of like right around three. And you know, you're not going to expect a ton of strikeouts from him. But you know, he doesn't have incredible stuff or anything. You don't really, it's like, why is he so successful? Well, he's just a good pitcher. So honestly, I think it's like, you kind of see what the Rays will do with him, but he doesn't, like, I already thought he was solid, and I think that it's going to kind of continue being pretty good. I don't think that the Rays are definitely going to make him like worse, if anything, you know?
Yeah. So Rays Cleveland trade pipeline continues to remain open. So that's always interesting to see teams that like to deal with each other over time. Diamondbacks getting Paul Sewald from the Mariners for Josh Rojas, Dominic Canzone, and Ryan Bliss. Bliss has really shot up charts this year. I think he played in the futures game. I think him being able to put up the average that he has with the power that he has, some of that obviously being in the Arizona system, I do think some of that has been inflated playing at Amarillo and playing at Reno. But I think he does have some, you know, legit pop. Just I don't think as much as his numbers may show. Canzone, I mean, they have a glut of outfielders, so they had to move somebody. He ends up getting the short end of the stick there. Rojas, I thought was going to be really good this year. He's been the exact opposite of really good, so they get rid of him. He does still have, interestingly enough, he's age 29 and he still has minor league options. So I think for Seattle, that's interesting. He was actually in the starting lineup tonight for Seattle. So as they continue to try to figure out what their second base situation especially looks like with Colton Wong, with Jose Caballero, looks like they're throwing Josh Rojas into the mix. They're trying to figure out who's going to stick there.
I think they traded Wong, didn't they?
I missed that if they did.
Oh, no, he was designated for assignment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, well, so he could be, you know, but so
that clears up a little bit of space, because I mean, I have Caballero. Literally, all he does is steal bases. He doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't really hit the ball well. But the few times he does get on base, he can work a walk well enough, and then he'll just steal like a couple bases, or they'll pinch run him, and he'll steal a base. That's literally all he does. Yeah. So I think they're hoping that Rojas maybe returns back to the 2022. Form that he had with Arizona, and not this year's form. Paul Sewald obviously going to the D-backs to help them with their bullpen, and he's another known quantity. I think similar to some of the guys that we talked about earlier, specifically talking about Jordan Hicks. Like, Sewald is another guy that, from a dynasty standpoint, you definitely want to go after, if possible, to try to get to bolster your own bullpen. If, again, you're in that situation where you have maybe a couple of good closers, you want that third guy just to really make sure, just in case there's an injury, just to really make sure you can lock down the saves hold, have good Ks, have good ratios. Sewald, that's what he's been doing for a while now. I guess Ryan Bliss, are you high? Your own Bliss than maybe I am.
Potentially
that maybe I don't.
But I think it's like you said, it's hard to believe in like the numbers that he's put up, because they're just like so crazy inflated, you know. Like, he was leading AA in batting average for a while there. He might have finished with the lead. I don't know, because he was promoted to AAA. And in 62 plate appearances in AAA, he's hitting .196. Yeah. With one homer. And so, you know, maybe that's kind of the bucket of ice water that he was going to get inevitably. We'll see how much he kind of bounces back from this kind of rough start to AAA. And he's still in a good offensive environment. You know, it's not like he went from like crazy good to crazy bad, or, you know, they're both great offensive environments. So it's kind of an even playing field from that standpoint. And I mean, it's AAA, it's an adjustment. So, it's, yeah, like you said, you know, how much were you really going to buy into it, especially since like what we had seen before was really nothing close to it. So I think you kind of have to proceed with caution. And Seattle's a tough place to hit, especially for power. So
So let's move on. We got Mark Canna going from New York to Milwaukee because they don't have enough outfielders, apparently, in exchange for Justin Jarvis. I did like Justin Jarvis. He's struggled mightily since the promotion to AAA. He looked really good at AA both this year and definitely last year when he first jumped on my radar. Again, the Mets pitching, they can't develop it. They can't buy it. Like, I don't know what's going on there. So maybe it'll be interesting. He was already struggling at AAA. Maybe the Mets can actually turn him around. And I don't think, you know, Milwaukee is in the Southern League. Obviously, they had tacky ball in the first half of the season. I don't think Jarvis was really a huge beneficiary of the tacky ball because, again, he looked good at high-end AA last season. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see, as he finishes out the year at AAA in the Mets system, if maybe they can make some improvements and get something more out of him. Canna going to the Brewers. I mean, I'm looking at, again, MLB.com. So obviously there's Yelich. You got Frelick, Blake Perkins, who they're still playing, Joey Weimer. We're assuming, you know, Garrett Mitchell is going to come back healthy next season. I mean, I guess Canada's a free agent, so maybe he won't be around next season. But are you interested in Mark Canna at all in the redraft or dynasty standpoint, like, whatsoever? Like, the deepest dynasty league?
No, it's hard to see. Yeah, interesting. Because, I mean, he'll be like the fourth outfielder. Essentially, it's the same role that he had with the Mets,
right,
but probably a little less playing time. So, and what I think it really hurts is Joey Weimer. Mm. I think that he's, even before these trades, he had started seeing a bit of a loss in playing time. I think he had only played like 3 out of 6 or something like that kind of before it. And now I think this kind of just cements that he is more of a defensive base running type of kind of guy at this point. I don't think he's rosterable in redraft in just about any league, really, because it's just... I don't think they're just going to get enough playing time. I think that these deals really just like further cement that they were kind of moving off of him as an everyday guy.
Well, who would have thunk a couple years ago he was setting the world on fire, and now here he is. That's the life of a prospect. Justin Jarvis, any thoughts on Jarvis going from the Brewers, who, you know, they're kind of in that, maybe not 1A tier, maybe 1B. Or number 2 tier as far as pitching development systems, but leaving there, going to New York, anything of note? Are you off of him now, and just, you know, you're ready to dump him, or?
Yeah, it's actually funny. I was just looking for his his Statcast like profile from his last start, and I was looking under the Syracuse Mets, and I was like, I looked at his game logs. He pitched today, or like on the 23rd, and he bitched for the Nashville team because he was on the Brewers. The trade had not gone through yet. So got past that, found it now. He doesn't throw very hard. Throws the average fastball 92.5, average slider 80.7, league average zone rate 23% CSW. He did horribly in the start, so like not exactly his best work, you know, but, and it's like, you know, even though he'd pitched poorly, you could maybe look at the arsenal and be like, okay, these are still good pitches, and don't super see where that's going to come in. You know, what's going to be the difference maker for him, especially since he has a kind of limited arsenal, just like four seam slider curve with 60. He throws his four seam 62% of the time. He throws it in the zone a ton. So I guess he has that going for him, but it's not a fantastic fastball.
Right.
You know, like he relocates it well, I guess, but you can only get so far against major leaguers, you know?
Yep. Candelario goes from the Nats to the Cubs in exchange for Kevin Mate and DJ Hurz. Candelario's had kind of a low key, you know, valuable season for fantasy purposes, especially. I think he continues to have, you know, pretty much everyday playing time going to the Cubs. They don't really have much of anything to block him or make him a platoon bat. So I think if you had Candelario. You can continue to ride him, right? The Nationals were terrible. Cubs are only slightly better, if that. So, you know, it's pretty much net neutral. As far as that goes, DJ Hurz, I know a lot of people liked. He's going from the Cubs to the Nationals. Say the same thing. I was having a long conversation on the Pitcher List Discord today. The Nats pitching develop, or really their player development as a whole, just doesn't move me. You can point to all the players that they've had in their system, and almost all of them have either been like a lottery ticket, one in a million, sort of like, how do you stumble onto this person and really just don't screw them up? Or they've come from another team almost like fully formed. So I've yet to see them take a player that they've gotten at the lower minors from another team or drafted, or, you know, for international signees, sign themselves and really build up from like, hey, this guy's kind of a fringe, you know, org top 30 guy to, oh, he's actually serviceable. I'm not even saying the superstar. I'm just saying like a serviceable everyday player. You know, the names are short. Is that the list of names that the Nationals have done that with are very short. And Hurz and Mate are definitely those types of players, those like 45, 40 plus FV guys that you really need a strong developmental team to push into, saying, oh, they actually pushed them into being like 50 FV guys or like, you know, 50-ish. And, you know, maybe the FV doesn't really matter, but they, you know, we get them to the major leagues and all of a sudden they're, you know, they're serviceable. They have a role. They are strong side platoon, or they are a, you know, SP4 type or low level or high leverage. I mean, you know, back in the bullpen pitcher. The point being, Kevin Mate for me is super young, but strikes out a lot. Has some pop, but I don't know that he is going to have enough power to overcome the fact that he strikes out as much as he does. Hurz, I don't know. You know, he has good stuff, but I think he doesn't have the command to remain as a starter. And I don't know if the Nats are going to make the move quickly enough to make him a high leverage guy and help him out that way. So then he kind of withers on the vine while they try to make him a starter. He's not a starter. If I have Hurz, I'm probably moving him. I'm probably just off of him and trying to dump him as soon as possible. But like I said, if you have Candelario, stay put, because nothing really changes with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, that about covers it.
Joe Boyle leaves the Reds, goes to the A's. Boyle is yet another Reds pitcher where it's always just been a matter of, can he command the, his pitches enough? He gets a bunch of strikeouts, but he also walks a ton as well. So he's the Reds' number 28 prospect according to Pipeline. 122 strikeouts, 75 walks at the time of the trade at least, and 84 innings. So
75 yeah. walks in 84 innings.
In 84 innings. So, I mean, that's pretty much Joe Boyle, like, in a nutshell right there. I don't know that the A's are going to get much more. They're probably going to end up pushing them into the major leagues anyway, because they need anybody that's a warm body that can play baseball. So I don't think that his development will get a boost there. Sam Maul was who got traded from Oakland to the Reds. He, you know, mid reliever type, not really anything from a dynasty standpoint. I'll be honest, I don't even know why I earmarked that trade. I think just Joe Boyle in general. I think just Joe yeah. Boyle, yeah. He I think I brought it up now that I'm thinking about it. I think I brought it up because Boyle seems like maybe he's the low man on the totem pole when it comes to the Reds pitchers that have had this sort of like good stuff but poor command profile. Abbott got his stuff together. They're still trying to get it together with Ashcraft. Help me out, Jake. Who's the third guy that I'm thinking of?
What, pitcher for the Reds?
Yeah.
Lodolo Green?
Not Lodolo
Green. And then, no, the one that just debuted this year, Abbott?
No, I said him.
Lively?
No. Jesus. It jumped out of my brain that fast. But there's a third one. Has a similar profile. Was able to. Oh, Connor Phillips. That's what I'm thinking of. Connor Phillips.
God, yeah. Okay, yeah. No, he's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Connor Phillips got his stuff together. Abbott got his stuff together. Ashcraft, they're still trying to figure it out. Boyle, not so much. He's on his way out. Let's actually get a move on with this. Okay. Actual stuff that we really should care about. None of this stuff. Not going to talk about him.
The Rockies have acquired a ton of just mid pitchers. Yeah, I think it's really fascinating. They're kind of, even their draft strategy is a lot of pitchers. I feel like they have to have some sort of master plan for how to handle Coors, and they're trying to, like, I get trying to do something, but like, they're just going to get shelled.
No.
I don't know what you want to do.
I think if you read the most recent reports, I think The Athletic had some good reporting on the Rockies in like 2021, I want to say. Even at the major league level, executives are like, they have zero idea what they're doing. Like, they really don't. And it seemed like from that reporting, and I'm pretty sure it's The Athletic. If it's not, I apologize. But I'm pretty sure it's them that were saying, like, they also hate dealing with the Rockies because they are, like, super difficult to negotiate with. But also, like, it's very obvious that they don't know what they're doing. So it's just, like, very frustrating. They're that guy in your fantasy league. Maybe I'm that guy in fantasy league. All right, let's get to headliners here.
Interesting stuff,
Justin Verlander going back to Houston. Along with Cash coming from the Mets. Mets get Drew Gilbert and Ryan Clifford.
Hell of a haul.
Major haul for the Mets. I really like Clifford. I was talking to a guy who drafted Clifford in my league who had been a big fan, and he was like, I don't know how to feel about Clifford going to the Mets. Houston just seemed like a great landing spot for a hitter like that to just sort of develop, not have to get pushed at all. And really just unlock some really key skills that would make him super valuable at the major league level, especially in the fantasy standpoint. I don't know that the Mets are going to get that out of him, but he still is a very good hitter. I think Gilbert's going to be Drew Gilbert kind of regardless. You know, he's not a superstar, but I think he does have I talked about this before, like that multi-category quality of just he's going to provide you. He's kind of a stat stuffer, to use an NBA term.
A little bit
like
of everything.
A little bit of everything. And I think that continues with the Mets. And I think, you know, with the Mets being a bit older and a bit broken, I think, you know, path to playing time opens up a lot easier for him than what it may have been in Houston. So I think if you have Drew Gilbert, while Houston is a better team than New York, I think the playing time opportunities and the path is better for him after this trade. So I think you have to be pretty happy with that. And then Justin Verlander going to Houston. Are you excited about this from a redraft standpoint? I'll keep it just in the redraft lane. Are you like, this is a good thing? Or are you like, actually, I want to trade him away like ASAP? Or...
Yeah, I think it's a good thing because it's where he kind of had his late season resurrection, you know, like he really kind of like took a step forward and like kind of became not really became a different pitcher, but kind of like worked with what he had in a different way than what he had before. Right. Like he figured it out with Houston. And honestly, I think he probably should have just stayed because I think it was a free agency, right, that he went to the Mets. I think I would have just rather seen him stay in Houston until he's done. I think at this point he'll probably be in Houston until he's done. And I think that like he's comfortable there. I think he really trusts the organization. And so I think it's a small bump up, you know. But it's not really going to make me sell him or buy him either way. You know, because even he's like the Astros are a better team, but similar offense, I think, to the Mets, at least kind of like the guys that they have, you know? So, I think it's just for him. I think it's just an organization he'd rather be in, I'm going to assume, because of just kind of his relationship that he already has with them and the success that he's had there. So I think it's a small bump for that, man. But like performance, I don't know. I think we'll see kind of more of what we've been seeing, you know? Very similar to Scherzer, just like he'll be good. Not crazy like we kind of expect, because right. he's you can only do so much when you're like 40. No offense, Lamar. Sorry, you're.
I'm not 40. I'm not 40. Oh, sorry. No offense to me at all, because I'm not 40.
Oh man, no, I know. I just giving you a hard time, but you know, you're the one out here talking about your back and your man. All your pulled sure. muscles and whatnot. Sure. The back. Man, I pulled my back, or I like completely messed it up. I was in the yard hammering at a fence because the dogs were trying to murder this little like rat, dirt rat animal thing.
Would that be a groundhog?
Yes, that's what it is. Thank you. Thank you. Right. But they were trying to kill this thing. And so we put up a little fence around like the burrow or whatever. And I was out there and I like, I don't know what I was doing, but I like hit the fence with the mallet yeah. and it just like,
yeah,
like all spazzed up on me. And I felt yep. so bad because like my dad has always had back issues. He's an electrician and he's yeah. every once in a while, he just pulls out the heat map or whatever, yeah. the heat pad. And I had to do that. I texted him. I was like, Dad, I'm so sorry for giving yeah. you all this hell, you know, like this sucks. And he Welcome. Thought it was the funniest thing. So I've kind of, you know, started that process as well. I guess I got to be careful about what gotta I'm doing. Stretch. So
stretching yeah. is key.
I can't keep talking crap because it'll come back to me.
This one was an interesting one. We talked about Cleveland making some space for Kyle Manzardo. They trade away Josh Bell to the Marlins, and they get in return Jean Segura and Khalil Watson.
And then they release Segura. They like parted ways with him already, like same day.
See, you're Johnny on the spot. See, you got the super up to date information. So. Khalil Watson, I mean, the odd, curious case of Khalil Watson continues. Mm-hmm. We know that the Guardians love their middle infielders that especially are projectable with some loud tools, and Watson definitely has that, but we know obviously maturity concerns dating back to his suspension last year. He's had some bright spots, very few and far between this year. Strikeout rate still not where you want to see it. Are you buying Watson at all, like taking a flyer on him just because he's changed the scenery? Cleveland's a pretty stable organization. Like, does any of that appeal to you?
Yeah, a little bit. Probably not enough to go out and buy him. I don't think I will in, you know, any of my teams. Maybe if there's like a performance boost that follows it, potentially might look into paying the price on that. But, you know, he's not exactly someone I'm like leaping for to acquire right now just because he went to the Guardians organization. But I love the move to open up a bit clearer path for Manzardo, though, you know, with getting Bell. And the Marlins are interesting because last year they said, we strike out too much. We have too many power hitters. We're going to get Luis Arraez and Jean Segura and do a complete 180, have a bunch of second basemen on the team, put Jazz in the outfield. And then now it feels like they're kind of overcompensating again in the other direction with also the burger trade, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a sec, but like it feels like they're really like a metronome, like back, like on all the way on one side and all the way on the other, you know,
it's almost like they don't have an actual direction from their front office. Almost
it is working though. they're outperforming expectations, and honestly a lot of the deals that Aang has made have worked out really well, you know. Jesus Lizardo has been awesome. Puck looked great until he didn't, and you know, so it's like I'm willing to let it play out and see how it goes. I mean, it's yeah, I don't know. They're trying to make the playoffs, which honestly, got to give them credit for that, at least, you know. But yeah, Josh Bell, I don't know.
Don't know what's up with that. They also get Jake Berger to go with the trade that you were mentioning from the White Sox. Again, White Sox showing up as well in exchange for Jake Eater.
From the White Sox perspective, why are you trading someone that you have another 4 or 5 years of control on? Who's been their second best hitter this year?
25 home runs.
Yeah. And he hits the ball really hard, strikes out probably too much, bad batting average, you know, but like there's plenty of time to work with them a bit on it, you know?
And even if that's just who he is, it's just a 25 homer guy that's bad average and bad OBP. I mean, there's worse things if you figure out the rest of your lineup.
especially from DH or third base. You know, you don't really need a 280 hitter there, you know.
So, yeah. But, yeah, he's gone. He's with the Marlins now. And then Eater, I mean, before the Tommy John, a lot of, you know, he was high up. And obviously Marlins pitching, they seem to have something there as far as getting guys at least to a certain point. Now, this is something that I've been paying attention to is, you know, we give Marlins a lot of credit. Oh, Marlins and pitchers, and look at how deep they are. And, you know, we were saying that for a couple of years, especially after they made the playoffs in the COVID year. And now you look and it's like, well, Edward Cabrera still hasn't gotten his stuff together. He's a cherry bomb, like, to use a Pollock, Nick Pollock phrase, like, he's a cherry bomb, like, almost every start. You never know what you're going to get out of him. You got Sixto Sanchez, who from some reports, like, not even a thing anymore. So you start to look down the line and it's like, maybe they're not as savvy as getting guys all the way to major league ready. Maybe they're just good with the draft and, you know, getting some value, getting them to move up lower minors to higher minors, but not completing the whole transition there. And it'll be interesting to see Eater in the Chicago system. He's come back, like I said, from having Tommy John. He's looked okay, not great, but, you know, again, he's still, you know, pretty young in his first season back from Tommy John that he had in 2022. I'll be honest, I would downgrade him going to Chicago. Like, I much rather just see him in Miami because of
absolutely
the track history they do have. But
better park, better coaching, better development, you know. And
that's another thing too, talking about park, like as hard as Berger hits the ball, like the Marlins ballpark is not great. So that kind of hurts him too. So this is kind of a trade that I think hurts both players involved and doesn't really help anybody. So yeah, odd. Last one. This is the last one that I have, and then we can wrap here. A little bit longer than what we wanted it to be, but so be it. Baltimore Orioles, my favorite team, picking up Jack Flaherty. About 2 years, maybe too late, but they picked up Jack Flaherty in exchange for Cesar Prieto and Drew Rom. I like the exchange as far as, you know, you don't give up much. You're trading from middle infield depth with Prieto. Rom, at best, was going to be a fifth starter. More likely, he's going to be a lefty reliever. So you're not giving up much of anything. And with Flaherty, I mean, he is a rental. You're probably not going to re-sign him. But if you can get anything good out of him just for the last 2 months of the season, that's going to help you out as you go into the playoffs. I mean, you know, you're leading the East. Your offense is clicking. Bullpen looks pretty good. You got Fujinami earlier. We'll see how that continues to work. Didn't get off to the best start, but he seems like he may have settled. So you got a 7-8-9 scenario for your bullpen. And it's just a matter of what you're going to do with the rotation. It seems like they're really, you know, you got Flaherty, but other than that, it seems like they're trusting Bradish. They're trusting Grayson. You're going to see how this goes. But Prieto, I thought he was going to be a little bit more interesting when they signed him. He was one of their first, like, big international signees under Elias once they opened up international signing again after not having really any system in place under Dan Duquette. But he's kind of been, you know, just mid-tier. And I already mentioned with Rom, I think just getting him to the point that they've gotten him to is a bit of a developmental win because he doesn't really have much anything as far as stuff is concerned. It's really all sort of angles and sort of that lefty savvy that we tend to talk about, that sort of intangible. But I don't see either one of them being major impact players. Do you think that there's anything left with Flaherty? Like, do you see him being a difference maker for the Orioles, and specifically from a dynasty standpoint, do you see him being any sort of difference maker now that he's playing for a much better team in a, you know, more interesting ballpark now, obviously the way Camden Yards plays, but you know, he is playing against some AL East opponents, not the NL Central anymore, not getting the Cubs, not getting the Brewers. Mm-hmm. Is there anything there, maybe a low value play for a redraft?
Oh man, I've never been interested in him this year, this offseason. I don't think it's enough to make me interested in him now, because he's still like worst walk rate of his career, worst zone rate of his career, can't get any chases outside the zone, CSW's bad, swinging strike, it's all like meh. It's a better ballpark, better team that he's playing on. So I think it's going to help. I think it's mostly going to help the real life baseball team, bringing in a veteran that can get you good innings. That's definitely going to be solid at home, you know, extends, I think, the playoff rotation, just makes it deeper. And so I think he's going to be more of a contribution in that sense than necessarily for like fantasy teams. I just don't think it's enough for me to like look past the things that I was avoiding him for before this.
All right. So with that, we're going to wrap here. I think the takeaways here from the trade deadline is, like I said, a lot of shoulder shrugs, a lot of sort of meh trades. I think, you know, once they moved back the trade deadline date, I saw reports right after that was announced as part of that new CBA. A lot of executives were saying like they anticipated the trade deadline being essentially what we saw today. You have a lot more teams that think that they are in the race than what they might actually be, but because it's later in the season, they're more willing to make a push for it and not be sellers. So marketplace not really as active. And I think you're seeing a big impact of prospecting just overall, with teams not really being willing to move top end guys to make splashy trades. I shouldn't say anymore, but in the way that we have seen maybe 5 to even 10 years ago, where these a lot of those types of players were, you know, given up with very little thought given to, you know, if I'm getting a major Dylan Cease or a major arm, a major bat, I'll make that move. And I think you're seeing a lot more of holding on, nibbling around the edges with negotiation deals. And obviously we don't know everything that went, you know, has gone down as far as, you know, potential negotiations, but it'll be interesting to see if this is the new norm for trade deadlines moving forward. So we'll see. We'll see what the rest of this season has for us, as we are officially in August. So we got the 2-month sprint to finish out the season. With all that being said, I would like to remind, first, actually, before we get into that, anything new to promote, Jake? Or is it same old from you?
Yeah, same stuff. It's just the Pitchers Stash article. And yeah, I think that about does it, you know?
Okay, cool. Before I get into my normal spiel, would encourage anybody who's a member of the Pitcher List server, so any of our PL Plus members, you know, continue to hang out in our live chats. Keep an eye out. We're going to do a better job of kind of letting you know who's going to be answering questions when, so you can see a schedule by week of who's going to be answering questions, what date and what time. So, you know, come with your questions, especially, you know, certain writers have certain, you know, specialties or areas of expertise. I try to come around on Wednesdays in the afternoon, normally around 12 o'clock. So prospect and dynasty stuff, you can check for me then. But just a little plug for live chats if you're in the Pitcher List server. But as always, want to remind listeners that you can find this podcast and all of our Pitcher List pods on the Pitcher List Network podcast page. They're all available in the podcast section of Pitcher List for you to find, listen, and subscribe. You can find me on X. It's officially X. It updated the icon on my phone. You can find me on Twitter. You guys know what I'm talking about. You can find me on Twitter at Inside Fastball, capital I, capital F.
And you can find me on Twitter at Jake Maish, M-A-I-S-H.
And of course, you can follow the pod to catch up with our episodes at P.O. on the farm. With all that being said, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.